For 4 years, Samantha Bee was a thorn in the side of the Trump administration, so you'd think she would miss the president. But no, she says Donald Trump losing the election was the best thing that ever happened to her show. I'll ask her why. But first, all the loved ones can do is wait and pray, and that prayer is coming in the form of a solemn beach ceremony with white roses and glow sticks. We're going to take you there. And the wall of the missing. It is hard not to remember the same images during 9/11. We've got the very latest on the Surfside condo collapse on Banfield tonight. Day six, and hope is dimming. The families right now are doing the only thing they can do, and that is pray. And so many people in the Surfside community want to pray with them, and now they're getting a chance because they've been gathering on the beach in the dark for a vigil where white roses are handed out and glow sticks are given out to those who can attend. Volunteers doing that duty. Hotels providing the roses. Our Dave Siegel reports from a dark scene on the Surfside beach.
Ashley, thank you. Forgive my lack of lighting, but it's a very dark scene here in more ways than one. I'm about 3 blocks north of the collapse site outside the Four Seasons Hotel, where they've organized a memorial service on the beach. About 100 to 150 people have gathered. They're handing out these white roses and glow sticks so people could make their way to the ceremony. And they're raising some donations here as well. I'm going to give you a glimpse about what's going on the beach, but I'm not going to interrupt the ceremony with any commentary.
You can open yourself with each other. And honor the beautiful community that we have together. Thank you. Thank you for showing up. Thank you for your support. And we send our ultimate love and our condolences.
It is such a heartfelt moment for those who are not only waiting for news of their missing loved ones, but also the community that wants to do anything they can, but they feel so helpless. So prayer on the beach is about all they can do right now. At least they're all together. I want to give you some of the other big news of the day, and I want to start with this. There is an ex-Surfside official who has now chosen to take a leave of absence from a new job as a Doral's temporary building official, and the reason that official, Rosendo Ross Prieto, has decided to take a leave of absence is because of a troubling 2018 report. That report was a review of the Champlain Tower South condo, and it was a troubling report. Let me read a couple of pieces of it that are so critical. The waterproofing below the pool deck and entrance drive, as well as all of the planter waterproofing, is beyond its useful life and therefore must all be completely removed and replaced. The failed waterproofing is causing major structural damage to the concrete structural slab below these areas. Failure to replace the waterproofing in the near future will cause the extent of the concrete deterioration to expand exponentially. I don't know if anything changed after that report, but I can tell you that that official told the residents that the building appeared to be in, quote, very good shape. And now that official is taking a leave of absence from a neighboring town of Doral. Also today, we learned that 3 million pounds of concrete has been removed, most of it pulverized. There is still falling debris, which makes the work still extremely dangerous for those volunteers and those workers who are on the pile. 440 state workers in all are assisting in all of this. They are looking into void spaces. Every time they come across them, they have not found any additional bodies. They say now they cannot and will not go back into the existing building because it is simply not safe. The Miami mayor said that 4 different balconies have been closed on a nearby building after an emergency inspection. We don't know which of those nearby buildings is being referred to. But the mayor also said there will likely be a grand jury investigation and that the state attorney plans to address this issue. Every day, twice a day, the family is briefed by officials as to what exactly is happening in that pile. Painstakingly, grid by grid, search by search, flashlights, hands digging, buckets, etc. Every day they're briefed, twice a day. But this morning's 9:30 briefing is reportedly or was reportedly contentious. 210 rescue workers are on the scene. And as I said, no fatalities have been found. I want to remind you of what these family members are being shown and what they've been told in some earlier briefings. There's an easel at the front of the room that has a picture of the grid, of the wreckage, of the place that you're looking at rescuers on as a flat image. And it's divided up into a number of different quadrants. You can see it there. This is from the briefing on Saturday. If you count, you can see way off in the top right-hand corner, the numbers begin 1, 2, 3, 4. Then if you go vertically down 5, 6, 7, 8, again across the bottom, 9, parking and parking garage. The pool you can see in the far right-hand corner. In the middle, you can see 10, 11, 12. Critical to know this about this grid. 5, 6, 7, and 8 are still standing. Way out on the far right, 1, 2, 11, and 12 is a pile that only can be accessed by foot or by dogs, but not heavy machinery. Then you've got 3, 4, and 10, apparently where you can get heavy machinery. And the biggest expectation for a void was all along that long wall that's still standing, 5, 6, 7, and 8, where the debris meets the wall. That's where the officials thought there might be some of the most opportunity to find someone. They did say during one of these briefings that they're listening not for heartbeats, but for knocking, tapping, scratching, and moaning, that they've heard no voices, but that they are continuing to probe with sonars and cameras and infrared. Fires are making it difficult to use heat sensors. They've also likened the debris to 9/11, Oklahoma City, Haiti, and Mexico City, and they've assured the people in the room, the families, that many of the same teams that worked on those disasters are here. They also say they will not leave that pile for anything other than lightning. Lightning is the only thing that will take them off the pile. They say they'll stay there in 40-mile-an-hour winds. I want to bring in Glenn Corbett. He is a professor of fire science at John Jay College in New York, and he actually testified before Congress in the aftermath of 9/11. Mr. Corbett, thank you so much for being with us tonight, because I've read about you that your protocols also that you developed after 9/11 are being used currently in Miami. Can you tell me a little bit about what you've helped the rescuers and searchers in Miami to do in their work?
Well, thank you for having me, Ashley. One of the important things to talk about tonight is the fact that at the time of 9/11, I mean, most Americans thought that we had some type of federal capability to do a building disaster investigation, just like we do with airplanes, right? So the NTSB, everyone's familiar with that, that travels to every plane crash. Most Americans would have thought that we had something similar to that for dealing with building disasters. And of course, we know what happened was we had the two biggest buildings in recorded human history to collapse, and we didn't have that capability. We literally, unfortunately, threw at it, volunteers with limited time and money to do the work. So that led to, basically an upswell within several of the firefighter families of 9/11, particularly Sally Reagan-Hard, who took the initiative to create a group called the Skyscraper Safety Campaign, which actually led to congressional hearings in which they advocated for the creation of a building disaster investigation team, which actually happened in October of 2002. The National Construction Safety Team Act was passed and signed by President Bush. What that did is create an entity within the federal government, within an agency called the National Institute of Standards and Technology, to be deployed to major building disasters, fires, hurricanes, earthquakes, what have you, to study what happened, and most importantly, to figure out not only what happened, but make recommendations for the future.
So,
and
the fact, can I ask you, Mr. Corbett, I ask you to just take a look at the grid that the families are being shown? And
sure.
Maybe
sure.
I can get your professional information and your professional opinion of exactly what it is. Look, the families are being told the basics, what I just said about the basics. Grids
right.
1, 2, 11, and 12, only feet and dogs.
Right.
Grids 3, 4, and 10, heavy machinery, voids along the long vertical wall of the building still standing, 5, 6, 7, 8. What don't I know about the grids I'm looking at that you might see?
Well, these, as you pointed out earlier, this grid was created to identify the conditions on the ground, right? So not the entire site is not exactly the same in terms of accessibility, perhaps the location for void spaces, things like that. So this is a this is a typical and traditional way of approaching the search, right? We use grids all the time to sort of make sure that we cover all these areas. I think what this does for the families is helps them understand where the work is actually being done and what is actually what has taken place day to day in particular locations within the site. This is an organized way of approaching this as opposed to just throwing a lot of people in the pile and pulling things apart. This is a way that we can keep track of what has been done, what areas they may need to change from one methodology to another, those kind of things. So, again, this is a standard approach to dealing with building collapses, particularly but as searches as well. So.
Can I just ask you about this news, Mr. Corbett, about a possible grand jury investigation? It seems so early to be hearing that, but you would know better than I do about when you're dealing with search and rescue. There is also a potential criminal case coming down the pike, and some of what they're doing, of course, it is rescue right now, but some of it will eventually be extraordinarily important if there's a criminal prosecution.
There will be, but to be honest with you, I mean, I think, again, knowing that there's issues of accountability, I think that's where the grand jury comes in. What I was mentioning earlier about the National Construction Safety Team is a technical investigation, which will find out the root causes of why the buildings collapsed and, of course, making, again, recommendations for the future. So very often in a disaster site, these different types of investigations are taking place simultaneously. So, in effect, they're going to have to work together to get access to the information that they're going to need. But again, this is for, you know, it's important, again, for the families for accountability. But I would think the families also want to know exactly what happened here in terms of the way the building fell down. Why did it fall down? And what can we do to change things for the future?
Mr. Corbett, your information has been invaluable, and thank you for the work that you've done from 9/11 right through till you know what we're seeing right now. Do appreciate your insight into what we're seeing as well with the grid that the family's being shown. I want to also mention one other thing to our audience right now, and that is the I spent a lot of time down at 9/11 at Ground Zero 9 days straight after the buildings collapsed. One of the things I remember seeing profoundly was the memorial walls where the photos went up of the families. Something is different about this one, though. Yes, they are remarkably reminiscent, but there are some other pieces of information about this memorial wall that's going up that I think is very significant. You've probably seen the flowers that have been, you know, placed alongside all the faces of the missing. But there's something else that's being placed there. In the meantime, I do want to go down back to Dave Siegel, who gave us a bit of a feel up close and personal for what this memorial wall shows us and tells us, and what the community is doing at that wall. Here's David.
Thanks, Ashley. We're about a half block west of the collapse site where a makeshift memorial has been set up. You see the scores of people behind me lined up, really waiting their turn to pay their respects. If you take a closer look at the fence, each one of these pictures represents a different story of one of the residents of the Champlain condo complex. And even in some cases, they have the loved one's location narrowed down to their exact unit. We see here Richard Dick Augustine, last seen in unit 1210 on the 12th floor. Presumably his wife or partner is Elaine Savino, as she's also last seen unit 1210 on the 12th floor. So someone clearly very concerned for these people put these pictures up here waiting for some sort of miracle. Up here, in just something I can't even describe, seems to be a whole family that's gone missing. All I can make out is that it's the Kleinman family, and just the faces of obviously better times and the people waiting for news about their loved ones.
It's just so hard, Dave, to hear the floor and the condos that they were in. Something I want you to look at right now, though, earlier in the day. Miami-Dade Fire and Rescue. These officials, we found this on social media. Some people were there, you know, paying their respects, and they saw these officials come over and place teddy bears and personal effects. And all I can tell you is what those who were there, the public taking these images, can say. They said that these were artifacts from the rubble itself, don't know that to be true, but one of the teddy bears that we did see was covered in dust, and it was pretty remarkable to see the Miami-Dade Fire Rescue officials come to that wall in its early stages and place those items, whether they were actually from the rubble or not. They certainly care a lot about their jobs. It's not just about the fire and rescue. It's about the personal aspect as well. We thank them for their heroic work. All of this information that's coming in, look, we tell it to you on the news, but how is it being conveyed to the families? We're going to talk to Josh Spiegel. He's still waiting for answers about his missing mother, Judy. He's next. There are so many frightened people in South Florida right now who are reassessing the safety of their own buildings all along beachfronts and elsewhere. One man posted this to his social media, showing his parking garage and chunks of concrete, cracks, things that just look now uncomfortable, where you may have not even taken notice of it before. Now it seems everyone's going into their parking garages and looking up and wondering, are we safe to live here? Not only that, but certain officials are even mandating assessments be done on buildings in Florida. Full assessments before anybody can continue living there. It is a very difficult time, not just for those people, but it is the most difficult time for the people who are waiting for news of their loved ones. I want to bring in Josh Spiegel. That's him with his mom, Judy. We spoke with his sister, Rachel, yesterday. Judy bought her condo just days after her granddaughter was born, Rachel's daughter. Why? Because Judy wanted to be closer to her children and grandchildren. Her son, Josh, joins me now. Josh, I know you just came from the briefing, and the family's had, you know, two briefings a day. Can you tell me what you learned?
So they're not telling us much information, but they are updating us enough on what the process is. I think since the Israeli Defense Forces came and really helped with the organization of the digging of the rubble, it's extremely helped. The images you showed earlier of the plot, the maps of the area, have been updated severely, and they're really detailed now, thanks to the IDF. And while there's not much information, they told us one additional body was found. But that's about it.
They told you that one more body has been found? They told you this in today's afternoon briefing?
Yes.
Did they say anything more about that, Josh, as to maybe the identification process, the timing, the notification process?
So they don't tell us any of that. The notification is all done in person after they do DNA testing to make sure that they have correctly identified the victims. And in that sense, they have been doing an amazing job, because I think, as all of us well know, if someone found out before we did about our mom, we would be extremely angry.
And so far, Josh, has that been respected? Have you felt as though you've been briefed appropriately before the public is briefed?
Well, I wish we got more information, of course. But I think the initial organization of how the families got information was a little bit disorganized, but I think it's getting better. And like I said, I want more information, and I want to know where my mom is and to have her back. But I understand how complicated the process is and how they want to keep everyone safe, not just the people missing, but also the first responders.
Well, I can report to you, because I know there's a lot of different sources of information. People are on the move. I know you're on the move right now, that you,
yes,
you and the other families were notified of that additional body being found today before the press conferences that told the public that the death toll had risen. I hope that you're going to get some resolution to this. Can you tell me, Josh, if the contentious nature of the morning briefing replicated in the afternoon briefing, is it still contentious in terms of how the public feels with regard to what the authorities are telling them?
Unfortunately, I didn't make it to the morning briefing because the Zoom link wasn't working for us. They had changed the number, and unfortunately, we didn't know that. So I don't know what that experience was, but everyone is fighting for their family members' lives just like we are. And it's completely understandable that everyone's on high alert and we want answers. I mean, it's been now 6 days and they've barely found anybody, and that's not reassuring.
Josh, I think I can speak for everyone on my team, and I think most of the people who are there around you in that community, when we wish you all of the best and we give you our hearts and prayers and our thoughts for a positive resolution for your family. I also want to let our audience know for you, Josh, that anybody who wants to help donate to the Judy Spiegel Family Support Fund, they can find out more at the link at the bottom of our screen, which we've put up. We will keep you in our thoughts, Josh, and do check in with us if you learn anything new.
Yes, thank you so much. I want everyone to know that we started this fund to support my dad and also various charities that my mom is extremely invested in. So please check it out and please share and donate. Thank you so much.
Josh Spiegel, we'll speak with you again, I hope. We're going to reset right after the break.